WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. Our colleagues at Gothamist capture the culture and stories of New York City and here with a look at their ongoing series called Midtownissance. Takes a look at the public spaces and landmarks that make Midtown great. Liz Kinn, Jen Carlson, and Ben Iakis are in studio. So now, I can't do it. Jen, explain. Say it.
It is a Midtownissance.
Explain the Midtownissance series.
So I had to go to Midtown a lot earlier this year to the dentist, which is like, you know, Midtown and dentists are not something that you think would inspire this series but or a love for Midtown, but it did. And I told my coworkers that I think there's going to be a Midtownissance soon. And no one believed me.
She was met by a little bit of skepticism from some of us, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it's kind of a Brooklyn downtown crowd. Yeah. Saying, what do you say?
I think
of
it's
this?
Like anywhere but Midtown crowd.
Oh.
However, I personally, as someone who was very skeptical, I was very pleasantly surprised by some of the things I found in the series.
So what kind of things did you want to share with us?
So I reached out to a lot of writers and New Yorkers and just asked if there was like any way for them to think of one little thing they like about Midtown and write about it. So we did a lot of contributions, and it ranged from just personal love of something in Midtown to bars and restaurants to landmarks to some sort of, like, you know, nostalgic family tradition. And Liz had one of my favorite stories, which was about the Bryant Park green chairs.
All right, Liz, the green chairs in Bryant Park. For those who don't remember when Bryant Park was like, you had to sidestep needles going through. You didn't want to be caught dead in Bryant Park years and years ago. People don't remember that, but now it's this urban oasis, this beautiful, sprawling green lawn and places to sit. How did those chairs end up in
Bryant Park? So the chairs were actually an integral part of that revitalization. So the way the story goes is in the 1970s, there was this foundation called the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. And they were very interested in urban policy, and they funded and commissioned this report of how can we turn Bryant Park around? It's in this central area surrounded by all these offices. It really seems like a missed opportunity. So they hired this really bold thinker at the time. He was a journalist, but he was also a city planner. And he was just someone who just observed, was really smart and good at observing what was going around in the city's public spaces. So he basically watched and even taped people and how they use public spaces. And the conclusion he came to was what Bryant Park needs, among many other things, was this concept of a movable chair. Buy some movable chairs and you're going to see this place come alive. So he put that out in the late 70s, but it took more than a decade for them to actually get around to implementing this idea. So I spoke to some of the people who worked on this plan really early. One of them was Andy Manchel. He was hired basically to take this on. It took him 8 months to find a chair. So that just shows you how seriously he took this project. It took 8 months to find a chair. Even when he found, basically whittled it down to a dozen. And even then he had the staff vote on it. And they voted on this chair, this green, now iconic chair that was built in this small, manufactured in this small village in France. Everybody loved that chair. It really evoked a lot of things to them of like chairs that are in Luxembourg Gardens in Paris. So they voted on this chair. And it took a long time. It was very complicated to procure. But in April 1992, they unleashed 2,000 of these chairs into the park, and it was amazingly successful. There were a lot of fears that the city had. They were like, you're crazy. People are going to steal these chairs. This is ridiculous. And none of that happened. What happened was exactly what the original author of the report, William Holly White, said would happen. People are going to come to this park because they're going to want to use these chairs because you're giving them this sense of trust where basically, here's a chair. You move it the way you want to move it. Put two together, put your feet on it, do what you want with these chairs. And that idea has now basically been latched on to all these other public spaces across the country. So that was a really kind of a seminal kind of discovery. And it was really brought to life by Bryant Park.
So interesting, the psychology of that. One, right. That they had to have that many chairs. So it's not scarcity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're not having to fight for a chair.
Exactly.
Which is part of the New York thing, like, I gotta fight for my space. It's like, no, there's something for everybody.
Right.
Which immediately takes sort of one element out of it that could go wrong. And then the other is the psychology of like of sort of that fantasy of hanging out in Europe and just sitting
at the cafes
at the cafe.
Squares.
You know, I love that in Paris where all the seats face outward. Mm-hmm. Like you're just being part of the city, even though you're just sitting in this lovely chair. That is fascinating.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, and everybody says this, those chairs are not very comfortable. But the fact
maybe
that
that's part of it, that people won't stay forever and ever.
Yeah, but they evoke an image of something,
yeah.
And it's cosmopolitan, and, you know, people loved it.
Such an interesting story. Okay, so this other part of the Bryant Park story, as we discuss this, is a piece that you worked on, Jen, about the massive reservoir that used to be in Midtown, and you can access it through the public mm-hmm. library?
Yeah, so I kind of like just looking at this like one section of Midtown, and like you kind of stand there and you have what Liz was just talking about in like the current Bryant Park, but then you also have a lot of other stuff going on. Beneath Bryant Park is the New York Public Library stacks. And then what used to be there is this giant above ground Croton Reservoir, which was like a holding reservoir. And it had a promenade on top of it. So it was like this kind of still a kind of center of things. And people would go and walk around the top of this reservoir. And Edgar Allan Poe in 1844 wrote about it saying it's a delightful scene at night with the moonlight dancing on the water. And how you could, you know, look over and see the East River. You could see, like, all of New York. So it's kind of interesting just to think about all these things that went on at Midtown and how it's changed.
We're talking to our friends at Gothamus about the Midtownaissance, a portmanteau of Midtown and Renaissance. Am I correct?
You got it that time.
All right. So, Ben, you did something brave. You asked New Yorkers what they thought, which is always can always be a little dicey.
Yeah, yeah. On the street interviews are... You never know how it's going to go.
You never know.
We sent photographer Sai Mokhtari out to the streets to be able to talk to people who were out there and to say, what do you like about being here? What is so good about it to you as someone here regularly? And what we heard was like a lot of people really like the energy of the area. A lot of people cited, we love the energy, the lights, just the amount of bodies moving through. Which was sort of surprising to me as someone who avoids human contact at all times. People said they really liked the shopping. They said there's really good shopping. It's very convenient. And stuff's always open. No matter what time of day you go there, there's going to be something open that you can go and like linger in. A lot of people love, especially this time of year, the Bryant Park Market. Very popular space.
Yes.
Apropos of what Liz was talking about before. People flock to Bryant Park. That is like, in a lot of ways, the heart of that area. Not the middle of Times Square, but Bryant Park seems to be where really people are compelled to go towards. At least one person said that Hell's Kitchen, which, you know, is kind of part of Midtown. It has its own identity, but it really is in the same area. They really like that. They said it's a really up-and-coming neighborhood. What everybody agreed on, though, is that there's no good food in, like, the Times Square region.
Tough.
You have to go a little further east or west to be able to find the better food.
That's tough. Yeah, the food thing is tough. Did anyone mention the president's real estate holdings in Midtown?
Thankfully, literally nobody. The word Trump didn't even come up in any of these conversations. I'm very pleased to report.
All right. Anything else our listeners should know about the Midtownaissance? Do you think that's important? Someplace you want to send them you think that is sort of a gem that people don't know about?
I mean, Ben loves the Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Dave and Buster's there, and I would recommend it. As someone who never experienced that growing up, I've gotten to live my best life going there every once in a while.
Okay. It's an excellent series. It's really, really fun, I think. So congratulations on coming up with something new, unique. That's amazing in this day and age.
And finally, someone's putting Midtown on the map.
Yeah.
Team Gothamist, putting Midtown on the map. It's a new bumper sticker. Liz Kim, Jen Carlson, and Ben Yakis. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
On the way, eater, editor, and critic Robert Sietsema stops by with restaurant suggestions for Christmas Day dining. Stay with us. This is All of It